Thanks, John. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is by dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. Alcohol was my master, and my name's Ed Buckley.
Ed.
I was raised on the west side of Cleveland, Old Brooklyn area, Memphis Avenue. And the home I was raised in, I was raised by a single mom that had divorced my dad when I was about two. So I was raised, I never met my dad while I was growing up. And we lived there with my mom and her parents. And because my mom lived with her parents, and she was able to work while my grandma had watched me, she could afford to send me to private schools. So I was raised being sent to a Lutheran school. And, I was taught, when I'd leave the house to go play with my friends, my grandma would always yell at me, behave yourself, be a good boy. And when I'd go to these Lutheran schools, they'd tell me to be honest. They'd tell me to behave, think of other people, be kind to other people. Not that AA is religious or anything. It's not. But I'm just telling you, a little bit about how I was raised. I was sent to Sunday school. I was president of the youth group at my church. Every night before I'd go to bed, my grandma would take me and tuck me into bed as a child. And she would have me get down on my knees, and she would get down on her knees next to me. And we used to say this prayer, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. And then we'd ask God to bless, everybody in my family and all my friends and everybody I knew, I was active in the church, I had a good upbringing. I believe I was brought up the right way. I must have been about 11 years old, and my grandfather died. Now, he was like my dad to me. He was like a best friend to me. He was the only male figure I knew. And I thought, how the heck could a God let something like this happen to me? How could a kind, loving God let this happen to me? And I become very angry. I become very hurt. I didn't want to ever feel that kind of pain again. I didn't want to be close to anybody else in my family ever again. I quit doing things on family functions. I got kicked out of the Lutheran school that they sent me to because my mom wouldn't let me switch schools. I ended up getting out of that, going to Griswold High School, where you could get away with a lot of stuff at Griswold. No discipline at that school. There's none. And I hung around guys that were just like me, guys that isolated themselves from other people, guys that were loners, guys that liked to do things that were wrong, every now and then. You know, just do a little something wrong and get away with it to feel good. And then shortly after that, I found alcohol. You know, right around that time, I discovered alcohol. And I loved it so much that by the time I was 17 years old, I was in Glen Bay three different times. And my first time going there, they told me that after I was there for 3 days, I was going to have an intervention with my mom and grandma. You know, I started thinking about this, you know, this intervention thing. I'm going to, you know, I started planning it out. You know, I can't wait. You know, I want to tell my mom that, hey, we'd get along so much better if you just toss me a couple extra dollars here and there, you know. Get off my back about my grades. We'll get along a lot better, you know. Tell my grandma, you know, just let me hang around who I want to hang around with, you know. So what if they steal, you know. Counselor come and got me third day to go to this intervention. And they told me I'm not going to be permitted to speak at this intervention. The counselor sat in the middle. I sat on one side, and my mom and grandma sat on the other. And I had to listen to probably what was the most honest inventory I've ever heard of myself. You know, they told me they knew I was stealing money from them. And it hurt them. And it hurt them that I talked to them disrespectfully. They didn't teach me to use the kind of cuss words I was using. They told me they knew I was lying, and they didn't teach me to lie. They told me I was hurting them, and they didn't teach me to hurt people. And 3 days sober, My emotions are up and down all over the place, and I'm listening to them tell me this, and I'm full of anger, I'm full of hurt, I'm wanting to lash out, you know, and the counselor wouldn't let me talk. But then when they got done saying their piece, I was able to say mine, and I told them that the only reason I drank and had all these kind of problems was because they never told me the truth about my dad. And for the first time in my life, my mom said, you know, I divorced your dad and hid you from him, because he was a drunk and a drug addict, and we didn't want you to turn out just like he was. And at the time, I'd never met my dad, but I hated him. You know, I had the idea that I was an alcoholic, and I blamed him. You know, it was a genetic thing. It was all his fault. And today I can tell you, it just so happens in my case, I happen to be an alcoholic like my father's an alcoholic. Not an alcoholic because my father's an alcoholic, but an alcoholic like my father. And after learning all this about myself, when I left the rehab, I thought for certain, you know, I won't go back to being that kind of person I was. You know, I was convinced I had learned enough. You know, they did suggest that I come to these meetings and get a sponsor. Don't take that first one no matter what. But I was convinced I had known enough already. And I went back hanging out with the same friends. And I didn't pick up right away. Eventually, I picked up. I met my high school sweetheart, got engaged to her. And she drank just like I did in high school after we graduated. She stopped and wanted to grow up and be responsible and have a family, and I like talking about that, you know. I like talking about growing up and having a family, but you know, we'd make plans on the weekend and I'd be off with my friends. You know, I had every motive, every want in my heart was to marry this girl and spend the rest of my life with her. But when the thought came into my head that getting drunk was the right thing to do, my priorities changed. She no longer became an important part of my life. You know, being honest to her was not a priority. You know, being there for her was not a priority. Once that thought came into my head, alcohol. You know, and I'd feel lonely when I was with her. And I'd get an idea that if I hung out with my buddies at the bar, that loneliness would go away and I'd feel good. And I'd spend a weekend with my buddies, hanging out at the bars, hanging out at parties, and the party'd be over. And I'd feel lonelier than I was before I started off. I get an idea, I got to get my girlfriend back. I got to make up with her. That's the only way this loneliness is going to go away. It's the only way I'm going to feel good. I'd get her back, and it seemed like it was okay at first, but no, I was still miserable inside. I still had a lot of anger. I still had a lot of emptiness, a lot of loneliness. We got in a big fight one day. She told me that I drank too much, and I told her if I wasn't going out with you, I wouldn't have to drink so much. And she says, "Okay, well, we'll fix that." and that was it. She left me, and I was always able to kind of manipulate her to get her to come back in my life. I was always able to kind of manipulate her back, and it wasn't happening this time. No matter how hard I tried, I was kind. I'd snap at her. I'd do whatever I could think of to get her to come back, and it wasn't working. So I tried these meetings. And about three months, I had gotten her back. And I didn't learn nothing what doctor's opinion teaches you. I had no idea what an alcoholic really was. The way the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous lays it out. But I was at a meeting, and a guy stood up and said, "My name's Ron Buckley, and I'm an alcoholic." And I was with my buddy Ted at the time. And I'm looking at my buddy Ted. Wow, this guy's got the same last name as me. I'm wondering who he is, if he's related to me by any chance. So we go up and talk to him after the meeting, and it turns out he's my uncle. He says, "Yeah, I'm your dad's brother. I think your dad's in the program, too. How'd you like to meet him?" So he set it up for me to meet my dad, and I met my dad for the first time at an AA meeting. I was about 20 years old at the time. And go to the meeting. I figure out who he is. We sat next to each other. Didn't say a word. Meeting was over. We're still, I know I was full of fear. I wasn't very good at socializing unless I was drunk. Then I could talk a little bit more. But we're just sitting there, and if you're new and you think you might have a problem with alcohol, there's absolutely no reason in the world to pick up. Nothing ever gets better. Things only get worse. My dad says to me, he says, "This ain't no way for us to get to know each other. Let's go out and get drunk." And at the time, I thought it'd be the coolest thing in the world to get to know my dad by going out and getting drunk with him. So after the meeting, went out, and for about the next 3 months, I was drinking with my dad almost every day, getting to know him. And after about 3 months of getting to know him, I decided he was too big a drunk. I didn't like him. He lived in about five different places, had about three, four different girlfriends, and it was just, I'd go to one place, and he no longer lived there, and it was crazy. It was crazy. My fiance left me for good. I couldn't con or manipulate her to come back. There was just nothing left. And I'm full of emptiness and loneliness again. Going to the bars, trying to feel good. I meet a barmaid. And I thought, man, this is a solution. With this girl, I won't have to lie about my drinking. We could drink together. It'll be acceptable in this relationship. It was a relationship made in hell. I was mostly just a beer drinker up until this point. She had liked to do shots a lot. And she introduced me to Jägermeister. Now, that was another relationship made in hell. I started getting violent off of that stuff. Her being a barmaid, a lot of times a guy would grab her or something behind the bar, and I didn't know how to handle situations like that. Most of the time it had happened, it'd be toward the end of the night, and I'd be very intoxicated off that Jaeger. I couldn't walk, let alone fight, and I would get my arm dislocated constantly and sent to the hospital quite often. And I knew I had a problem. I knew I had a problem. The seed was planted. I had been in rehabs before. I had been to AA before. But I wanted this girl. I was scared to get sober by myself because of that loneliness. I couldn't stand to be lonely. I couldn't stand it. You know, so I tried to hang on to her and get her to come to meetings with me. I'd drop her off at the bar. She quit working in the bar, but she'd still want to hang out there all the time. And then I'd go to a meeting. And after the meeting was over, I'd rush out the door to come to the bar to meet her. And I'd do my best to stay sober. And I'd sit there for her to finish her last one, which usually, you know, took about 8 hours or so. And this would go on and on for about 3 to 4 months. I was able to stay sober. And one day I was already angry. I was resentful. I wasn't happy. I had bought in a house. We were living together. You know, 23 years old, I had a beautiful house, a built-in pool in my backyard, a three-bedroom house. I'm working 60 hours. They're paying for me to go to school. You know, I'm successful, but I couldn't put the drink down. I couldn't put the drink down. I'm sitting there in the bar with her, and she's laughing. Ah, Mr. Sober, all these jokes, you know, and you know, she's doing shots of Jaeger right in front of me, and I'm just full of resentment, and I couldn't take it no more. I said, bartender, you know, let me have a Bud and a double shot of Jaeger chilled. You know, and that helped me deal with my resentment so much that like about a month later, I end up going in a blackout and getting a felonious assault charge. And I was sentenced to 3 to 15 years in Mansfield. Out of that 3 to 15, I ended up doing 4 years. And while I was in Mansfield, I had time to take a look at myself. They had meetings there. People would come down once a week, and I see a lot of them guys at meetings now that come down. I try to figure it all out. There were guys down there we used to call penitentiary preachers. They wouldn't even need a Bible. They just start reciting every verse out of the world to you, right out of the Bible, you know. And because I was raised Lutheran, I could talk a little bit Bible too. You know, I was friends with these guys, and we talked quite often, you know, and they told me they got God in their life, and things are going to be different, you know, and they're there just for a couple months. They go home, you know, a couple months later, they're back again, and they're doing the same thing over. They got God in their life, you know, John 3, verse 16, you know, reciting all these passages at me, you know, and they go home and come back again. You know, I mention that because it put an idea in my head that God doesn't work. You know, I believe from what I know today that what these guys were missing was a spiritual experience that we get from these 12 steps. You know, that's why they couldn't stay sober. They were missing out on a vital spiritual experience that we get from these steps. But anyhow, after leaving the prison, I heard John Clark lead on Tuesday, and he says, convict mentality. I left with that convict mentality. I call it penitentiary values or penitentiary morals. You know, my thinking had changed from being locked up. My thinking had changed from being locked up. I thought, you know, after doing all this time in prison, I could certainly drink like a man, you know, just on weekends when I want to. You know, I should have some kind of control on it. You know, I barely gotten drunk over the past 4 years. You know, hooch, and we got some 151 in there a couple times, and substances beside alcohol. I wasn't sober if I was doing that. I get out, and my parents, that my mom and grandma and my aunts, that were there to visit me religiously every week. They wanted to come and pick me up, but I didn't want them to come pick me up because I couldn't get drunk if they would have come pick me up. I had one of my old buddies come pick me up, and I got drunk away coming back to Cleveland. And I'm on parole drinking. It would be an automatic violation of my parole, and I'm doing it as soon as I walk out the door. After being out of prison for less than 2 months, now I swear to God I wasn't going to drink and drive. And where I live on Memphis Avenue, I could walk across the street to the Trio Tavern. Down two blocks is Dina's Pizza. Two more blocks down is Harry Buffalo. I don't know what they call it now. And two more blocks is that Drew Carey Bar, the Warsaw. And across the street was a cinema. I used to love to hang there. Two more blocks down, Memphis Tavern. I used to love to hang out there, too. That shopping center there, Kenny's Tavern, the Alco. You know, I used to go to all them bars all the time. I wouldn't stay at one bar for too long because I was always scared that something was happening in another bar and I was going to miss out if I didn't get there right away. But I'd walk to these bars, and one night, less than 2 months out, I'm drunk and I run into somebody else that's drunk and I drive their car and get a DUI on parole. And they was easy on me. They were very easy on me. They could have sent me back, but they didn't. Put me on parole and probation. But I kept drinking through it all, and I didn't get in any more trouble. I'm still feeling empty inside, feeling lonely all the time, you know, going to the bars, you know, hopping from bar to bar to bar to bar, trying to deal with this loneliness, you know. And then one day I get a phone call. Here I got a half-brother. You know, my dad had several children with other women beside my wife, or beside my mother. And he had several children, one older than me, the rest all younger than me. And he said our grandma died, and he wanted to meet. And the phone number he left got disconnected. But I kept seeking him out now that I found out I had a brother. And I found him, and I thought that this was the answer to all my problems, you know, the emptiness, the loneliness. He drank just like me. You know, I thought it was all going to, you know, vanish away. Me and my brother, you know, we're going to drink. We're going to spend the rest of our lives getting drunk together. You know, family, you know, and God, a lot of people say drugs got him here quicker. I got to say, drinking with my brother, that got me here quicker. He's a little crazy guy. His mother was hillbilly, and he was wild. Lot of trouble in the bars. And I'm trying to find a job. I'm having a hard time because now I'm a convicted felon. And I'm getting drunk so much, I'm starting to wake up with the shakes. My drinking's getting worse than it's ever been before in my life. I'm starting to wake up and I'm getting pains in my liver, you know. And the only thought in my head is, man, if I just get that six pack of Tall Boys, the pain in my liver will go away. And that used to be the first thing I'd do in the morning, you know, 9 o'clock, as soon as that corner store would open up. If I could find $4 in my wallet, if I could steal it from my mother, if I stole it from my brother the night before, if I stole it off a bar table, if I could get it from anywhere, you know, I was drinking that six pack of Tall Boys for breakfast, man. And that got me to stop shaking. The pains in my liver went away. I felt like a new man. And I would say to myself every day that I'm just going to get drunk today. I know I need to quit. I know it's not healthy for me. It's tearing me up physically. I just kept lying to myself. I was stuck. You know, I'm just going to get drunk today. I'll quit after this party Saturday. You know, a bunch of guys are going out on Friday. I'm going to quit after that. And I couldn't do it. And that emptiness, that loneliness inside was consuming me. I'd never felt so empty, so lonely before in my life. You know, I didn't want to live anymore. There's nothing to live for. I lost my house when I went to prison. Anybody that I ever cared about was gone out of my life. All the money I had was gone. You know, I worked hard and lost a lot of money. All gone. You know, everybody close to me. My own self-respect. You know, the one thing that I feared in life was to be a loser. And I felt like the biggest loser in my life. All my life I wanted brothers and sisters when I was growing up, and now I got one. And what the heck kind of example am I? I'm hanging out with my brother. I don't have no money. I'm mooching off of him. You know, he's got a little kid and a wife to take care of, and I'm bumming the money that should be buying them food. You know, and man, I just I hated myself. I hated myself, and I don't even mention all the rehabs I've been to, because I've been through a lot. You know, I'd go, you know, for the weekend, the 30 days, whatever, you know, and I'd leave with the intention that I was going to get drunk one more time to reward myself or to say goodbye. And never stopped. I never stopped. I'm coming to these meetings constantly, reintroducing myself every week. Sometimes reintroducing myself more than once in a week. A lot of guys that tell me, you know, just go pray. Go pray. You're not staying sober because you're not praying. And I'd go home and I'd pray. I'd pray. God, keep me sober. I don't want to live like this anymore. And the pains in my liver and the shakes and the thoughts racing around my head, wouldn't that go away? Wouldn't that go away? And I'd get an idea. Maybe I could just go across the street and hang out at the bar and sit with them guys at the bar and not get drunk. And as I'm sitting there, you know, two or three beers won't get me drunk. You know, then I'm wondering. A couple days later, what happened? How did I start back up again? Angry at God because I asked him to keep me sober and it never worked for me. Went to a meeting, got drunk right after the meeting. You know, a lot of times during Our Father, I'd be planning a drunk. You know, just because sometimes I'd be feeling good and a thought had come into my head, hey, you'd be feeling a heck of a lot better. You get that six pack of Tall Boys. You know? And that was all I knew, was that thought that thought came into my head, and I believed it. And I believed it. Or I'd be feeling crappy, thinking I need a six-pack of Tall Boys to make me feel better. And one day, I'm tore up, you know. People used to think I was drinking before I come to the meetings, and nah, it was always from the night before. But I didn't drink a morning, and I come to a meeting, and this lady, in her kindness, seen me reintroducing myself over and over. And she had about 20 years sober at the time. And she took me over to her husband and said, would you please, please help this guy? And they started spending a little bit of time with me after the meeting, you know, and I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to get drunk bad. You know, them thoughts kept coming into my head, you know, and I couldn't shake them. I couldn't shake them for nothing. And these people would talk to me, you know, and they'd tell me I don't have to live like that anymore. And they kept telling me that if I stay sober, things will get better, you know. And I really didn't like these people because they were so kind. But gradually, I started to trust them. And I'd tell them what was going on in my head. I'd tell them, I don't think I can stay sober because I don't have a job. And they'd yell at me, don't drink, go to meetings, you'll be sober. And the thoughts would be racing around my head. I'd be trying to figure this all out. You know, trying to figure out what's a trick to this. What's a big trick to this, you know? And I'd start thinking, I said, man, I can't stay sober. I don't have a girlfriend. And they'd yell at me, don't drink, go to meetings, you'll be sober. And I'd put my head back into my hands, and I just remember the thoughts racing around. You know, I'd come up with all sorts of ideas. The thought to get drunk would keep popping up, you know, and it'd stay for a couple minutes and go away. And I'd be thinking, trying to figure this out. You know, I don't have a house. I don't have any kids. I can't stay sober. Don't drink. Go to meetings. You'll be sober. You know, in my head, back in my hands. You know, and this would go on night after night after night. It didn't click for me. You know, then one day I was sitting by myself and I come up with this brilliant idea. As long as I don't drink and go to meetings, I'm going to be sober. I started to get enthused about staying sober. This is something simple. I could do this. It might work. And everywhere I walked, don't drink, go to meetings. Don't drink, go to meetings. Don't drink, go to meetings. I just kept telling myself that over and over and over because the thoughts that were racing around my head were not pretty. You know, especially that getting drunk thought. It was coming constantly. You know, I knew there was hope. As long as I don't drink and go to meetings, I got hope, no matter what else happens. And then they tell me I should probably start working on being a little bit more honest. I thought, who the heck are you guys talking to? I am an honest guy. You know, and they pointed out how I kept trying to lie myself into getting drunk. You know, and they're taking me to meetings. They did my first 90 and 90 with me. And every night they'd sit up with me. Now this is a husband and wife that have 5 kids, you know, and they're sitting up with me till 2:30 in the morning every night because I can't drive past the bar without going into it. That obsession was strong. It gets strong. You might not have had it that strong yet. I guarantee you. You go back out. I've gone back out enough times to know it gets stronger. It gets stronger. They're taking me back to their house. They showed me how to make coffee in their own house. You know, whenever I wanted a cup of coffee, a pot of coffee, I could go ahead and help myself. And these people didn't know me. I was just a drunk showing up at these meetings, reintroducing myself. You know, and then they're telling me, you know, they're sitting up with me till 2:30 in the morning. Then they're telling me if I feel like I'm in trouble after I leave, come back, come on in, help make yourself coffee. You know, there's a big book laying there. Try to read it if you can. And I didn't understand what these people were trying to get from me. I didn't have no money, so I thought, what the heck, I'm going to take a shot. And then they tell me I got to start trying to be a little bit more unselfish. I thought, what the heck you mean, me, be unselfish? I am an unselfish guy. I put a dollar in the basket. I know you've seen me because I waited till you was looking before I put it in there. And then after the meetings, we're going back to their house and we're getting in the big book and they're explaining doctor's opinion to me, trying to help me understand why I can't take a first drink, what happens to me. You know, how it's an allergy. And I knew if I had 3 or 4 beers, I'd start feeling kind of irritated and would want more. But they explained to me I couldn't take one because a craving had come about. You know, I knew when I was engaged and I had every intention of getting married to my fiance, I was not drinking to escape any kind of reality whatsoever. I was drinking to escape a craving beyond my mental control. And they took me through Bill's story, and there's a solution. They helped me understand how I tried different ideas, you know. Sometimes I tried just drinking beer, putting the Jaeger on the shelf. And I got DUIs, I got in fights, I got in trouble, you know, off of just drinking beer. And then there were times I tried just drinking Jaeger instead of instead of beer, and that never worked out good. More about alcoholism. We agnostics, that was a real good chapter for me. We agnostics, I think I made it clear how my feelings were about God, you know, how I hated him, how I didn't think he could work, how I seen other people say they were using God and they kept coming back to the prisons, and how I hated God, blamed them for letting my grandfather die. They told me my own conception of God. They helped me open my mind up. They told me maybe something out there created you to live your life a different way than what you was living it. And that gave me hope. Maybe something out there did create me to live my life a different way than what I was living it. And I took a chance on that. And the rest of these steps have been trying to help me be that person that a creator made me to be instead of the kind of guy that I wanted to be. And we got into how it works. You know, and I couldn't understand, you know, God. How come God won't work for me? You know, I'm trying all these things. You know, why won't God work for me? God's not working for me. You know, and I got into how it works, and I explained it being a new employer, being all powerful, he provided what we needed as long as we stayed close to him and did his work well. And I started thinking, no wonder God ain't supposed to be working for me. I'm supposed to be working for him. That's why he's God. All the times asking God to do this for me and do that for me. You know, become time to start asking God, hey, what you want me to do for you? And I said that prayer in the book, that third step prayer. And then I launched out, did that fourth and fifth step. And I must have had about 6 months sober at the time, I believe. And after I did that fifth step, I started feeling feelings of gratitude I didn't even know existed before. I was happier than I ever was before in my life. And I'm wanting to do something for these people, to thank them, you know, for all the time they spent with me. And for how much they taught me about Alcoholics Anonymous in that book. All the time and everything they spent. And all they said was just thank God and do the same for another drunk. Just thank God and do the same for another drunk. They didn't want nothing in return. Nothing in return. And then they pushed me into going back to school. You know, here I am, a scattered brain drunk. My thoughts are starting to slow down. I'm starting to think. I'm starting to be able to use my brain. And they pushed me into going back to school. I had gotten an associate's degree in web development. Took 2 years. And 9 months sober, my grandma died. And I started thinking, man, a lot of my old thoughts came back. A lot of my old thoughts came back. I thought, you know, how the heck could God let this happen to me when I'm trying to live my life the way he wants me to live it? You know? I become very angry, very confused. That was kind of rough to deal with. But I hung on to the five most spiritual words that were ever taught to me in AA. Don't drink, go to meetings. You know? Don't drink, go to meetings. As angry as I was at God, them five words still kept me coming back. You know, I know from working the steps as much as I have, I can't hold on to anger. I can't hold on to any anger. It'll get me drunk. It's especially anger toward God. About a year and a half sober, I went through some other negative feelings. I didn't know what they were at the time. You know, most of the time I'm happy, you know, through sobriety, feeling good all the time, but I still got to deal with them lows. And I didn't know what it was at the time, but my sponsor wasn't spending much time with me, and I'm trying to work with new guys all the time that just ain't listening to me, and things just ain't things that just ain't going the way I want it to go, and I'm not too sure how to deal with all this stuff. And I'm starting to feel self-pity. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I know today it was self-pity. And I started talking to Chuck Walsh from the Newberg Group, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And he started helping me think a little bit more positive, you know, started telling me all the time, you know, hey, thank God you're not in that prison. Thank God you're sober. Thank God you got a place to live. You know, thank God you got your license. Thank God you got that car. You know, thank God you got your mother. And told me to spend a little bit of time in the metro parks. Take a look at the trees and stuff in the metro parks and just say to yourself, there's got to be a power greater than me to have created all this beautiful stuff out here. You know, and I've done that. And I still do it. You know, he started telling me, before you go to bed tonight, just ask God to come into your life. You know, I started doing that. I found myself trying to seek God out a little bit more than what I was. Coming up on like about 2 years sober, Chuck had said something that really bothered me. He said, are you really trying to do God's will? And that stuck in my head. What the heck's that guy talking about? Am I honestly, truly trying to do God's will? And I couldn't stop thinking about it. That question just kept going through my head. Are you honestly, truly trying to do God's will? You know, I had been a two-pack-a-day smoker for over 20 years. And I'm looking at myself smoking, and I'm asking myself, are you really, truly trying to do God's will? And I used these steps to quit smoking cigarettes right after that. And I had about my first week after quit, I had tried to quit so many times drinking and just could never do it. Here I am 2 years sober, and I quit for a week. And I was so impressed that by using these steps, I was able to do that. I had just accomplished something I'd never been able to accomplish before. I'm feeling great. You know, I got this all licked. And my sponsor says to me, I'm not impressed with what you did a week ago. What are you doing today to try to get closer to your God? You know, and that made me think. You know, he says, the book says if we rest on our laurels, we're headed for trouble. You know, I need people like that to keep me going. You know, keep me trying to improve spiritually. Shortly after 2 years sober, I got involved with the lady. I started dating her just after she got a year sober. And it was probably the best relationship I had ever been in my life. We started detoxing people occasionally at her house. We'd have big book meetings. We started living together for a little while. And after about 2 years, it didn't work out, and we broke up. And when we broke up, I took an inventory in a way. I kind of thought about relationships in general my whole life. You know, I looked, and I know when I was drinking, Every time a relationship would end, no matter if it was with a girl or whatever kind of relationship, that I'd always think, man, I wished I wouldn't have gave quite as much. You know, I wished I would have mooched just a little bit more. You know, I wished I would have took him just a little bit more. You know, and something that happened along the line here in AA, because I don't think like that anymore. You know, there are people that are out of my life, dead, or just not in my life anymore, and I'm never going to see them again. And I'd wished I'd have been a little bit kinder. I wished I'd have been a little bit more considerate. I wished I'd have said I love you. You know, and the people at my home group, Newberg, they say, "What the heck's the matter with you? You got your mother in your life. Why don't you try to be a little bit kinder and more considerate to her? Tell her you love her. You know, you got your brother. You got people you work with. Why don't you try showing them a little bit more respect? I ended up having a little bit of a health problem. Nothing real big. Sleep apnea. And I had to go to the doctor. And the doctor told me that I was overweight. I probably should lose some weight. I'd sleep a lot better if I did. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I come home and I call my sponsor. Hey, what? Well, doctor says I'm overweight. I got to lose some weight. He says, well, why don't you try spending a little bit more time working with new guys and start spending a little less time inside that refrigerator? So I've been doing that, but the sleep apnea, that's been a problem of mine. It's gotten better. I another problem was this felony that I got. I tried week after week after week, 3-4 interviews a week sometimes, trying to get a job. You know, and man, constantly, you know, oh, you got a violent felony. You know, sorry, we can't help you. Sorry, you know, can't use you. You know, and trying again and again and again. Sorry, can't use you here. You know, sorry, try to get it expunged. And they won't expunge violent felonies. And, it was getting really depressing for me to keep trying and trying and trying and not getting anywhere. And I come to my home group, Newburg. I talked about it with some people, hoping that they were going to give me some words to help me just accept the situation as it was. And they said, what the heck's the matter with you? When did you ever give up so easily on trying to get that six-pack of tall boys? When did you ever quit trying to get that drink? And I left the group that night. And I try to keep that kind of determination in the back of my mind that I ain't never let nothing stop me from getting that six pack of tall boys. You know, and just a couple weeks later, I had a full time job and a part time job. And the part-time job, I just quit. I worked it for about 9 months, but I'm still working my full-time job. And it's been good. It's been good. Now that I quit my part-time job, they was telling me, you know, I got my associate's degree. I should probably go back and get my bachelor's. And I says, well, you know, I'm starting to get kind of up there in years, you know. By the time I get my bachelor's, I'll be in my 40s. They said, so what? You're going to be in your 40s if you don't go get your bachelor's degree too. So I'm planning on doing that for fall. And, man, just... things have been good. I have a big book meeting at my house on Wednesdays. There's usually 5 to 10 guys there. And that's probably been one of the best things going on in my life today. You know, the opportunity to try and help other people get these steps in their life like was done for me. You know, people took their time to do it for me. And they said, just thank God and do it for somebody else. You know? With that, I'd like to thank John for asking me. Can we say to our Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom,